When you need guidance from someone you can truly trust, someone who aligns with your values of sovereignty and natural living, look no further than Dr. Jennifer Tice. Dr. Jen's expertise in homeopathy and naturopathic family care is unmatched. She is my personal go-to when I need an opinion on how to best support my family and myself when we are healing. And something I'm always telling everyone about, Dr. Jen runs a very specific food intolerance test. Having this information has quite literally changed my life once I decided to take it seriously. Knowing what our specific foods were to avoid has radically improved the health of myself and my children. So if you're looking to uplevel your health, head over to drjennifertice.com and you can find her on Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Tice.
Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Matriarch Rising Festival, our annual summer solstice women's gathering, is here on my gorgeous land in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And it is the place to connect with me and the free birthing women and sovereign midwives of this epic birth liberation movement. I teach classes and host an intimate meet and greet the very first night of the festival, and you will even catch me DJing. Yes, I am Matriarch One. You'll get to meet all of our Free Birth Society luminaries, our wise women teachers, who you know from your favorite FBS courses. You'll meet the very women I interview on this podcast. This is the place for wild women and moms to meet up, connect, and forge friendships that can last a lifetime. It's truly the climax of everything we do, and MRF is so close to my heart. We're scaling back MRF 25 to be the most intimate yet, capping it at only 150 tickets, because this year I want to go deep. I just love the experience of getting to know each and every one of you by the end of the festival. For a long time, I held the vision of creating a women's gathering where true sisterhood could be woven, and Matriarch Rising is the manifestation of my dreams. I'm so glad I get to share it with all of you, and I want you there this year. Come learn directly from me and surround yourself with powerful women from all ages, all walks of life, and from all over the world. Make sure you sign up for our mailing list so that you can be the first to know when we roll out all of our insider insights of this summer's festival. I'll see you soon. Every now and then, a product comes along that our entire family can't get enough of. And lately, it's Masa chips. Delicious chips made the way food was meant to be. Just three simple ingredients: organic corn, salt, and beef tallow. No seed oils, no fillers, no ultra-processed garbage. Just real, whole food that nourishes rather than depletes. What we put into our bodies matters. It affects our energy, our mood, our resilience. And yet, the food industry today is completely disconnected from what's real and nourishing. Just like birth, food is one of the most powerful ways to claim sovereignty over our bodies. And it's no surprise that a sovereign birthing family is who makes these chips. When you snack, snack on something real. Go to masachips.com/discount/freebirthsociety and use code FREEBIRTHSOCIETY for 20% off your first order.
All right. Welcome, Anna.
Hello.
Anna or Anna?
Anna. Yeah.
Not like Frozen?
No. My daughter would probably want me to be Anna, but
for sure. Okay, so you said you have a big story. I'm excited to hear about it. And All I really know is you're in Washington and you recently free birthed your baby. So tell us a little bit about who you are. And then that'll kind of go into pre-motherhood. What's your relationship like to the medical system into your first pregnancy?
Perfect. Yeah. I have to say, I mean, most of my story, it has to do with, I moved a lot as a kid. My dad works with hotels. And so we were constantly kind of up and moving to a different location as he worked for bigger and better hotels, which eventually at one point brought us to Hawaii, which was an amazing place to go to high school. But that's also the Big Island.
Cool.
And that really opened my eyes. Before that, I lived in lots of like Midwest kind of feels where there's a lot of conservative Christian bubbles. And so I grew up with a lot of that. And my world was pretty small in that way of like, I thought everyone was the same. I thought everyone was a Christian. I thought everyone believed in Jesus, you know, everyone straight, all that stuff. And I moved to Hawaii and that bubble was burst quite quickly.
Amazing. And how old were you when you moved?
This was right when I turned 16.
Perfect.
So okay. I was still like quite childlike. I was like very, you know, young at heart at that point. I mean, like Disney princess, like. And then I got to Hawaii and I was like, whoa, there are a lot of different people who don't believe in what I believe in, who are all sorts of gay, lesbian, bisexual. And we went to this like liberal arts, private, small high school. So it was very different from my like Christian school before. And I find myself falling for a girl. That was a big, big drama with my family and just who they thought I was and who I was learning who I was. And
had you had boyfriends prior?
No.
Okay.
I had not. I had boy crushes and I still would say that I'm bisexual. I am attracted to both men and women. And so that kind of carried throughout. And as I was dating, I dated some boys, dated some girls once I got to college. And then I found myself going to France as an au pair during like my university days.
That's and like a really great place to go be a bisexual.
I probably, but here's the really annoying part. Okay. I was like 3 days in to my experience abroad for the summer and I meet like the love of my life. Oh, okay. And so that was like, I mean, great, but also annoying because I was like, France, this is going to be so fun. So anyways, I'm over there and
I'm in a different way when she hears this.
No, we laugh about it all the time. So I met Rebecca over there. She was also an au pair, taking Cute. Care of a family. And we just kind of spent the summer together with lots of kids, you know, foreshadowing for our future.
Cute.
Talking about all these things. We had followed the same like YouTube lesbian couple who were having kids because that was like wasn't that long ago, but it was like 2017 and it just wasn't super popular for like two mom couples to be out talking on social media about having kids. And so there was a few that we like followed because we knew we wanted kids, but we were like, how are we going to make that happen if we're end up with women? And so that was like really important to both of us. And we bonded on that and all that sort of thing. So came home from that, did long distance, got married in 2019. And pretty soon after we're like, we want to be moms. Like we both had always, always wanted to be moms and everyone around us was not really in that same stage as us. So we kind of felt different, but we just knew that's what we wanted. And so we started looking at different ways, what we wanted to do. Rebecca has a little bit more of irregular cycles and I knew my cycles were like super regular. So we knew when we wanted to get pregnant, we both wanted to get pregnant, but it might be easiest to get me pregnant first if we could just track my cycles and everything. So I started doing that, like peeing on sticks once or twice a day for months. To just kind of gauge my fertility and everything was like perfect.
Like, and was all the signs idea that you would like alternate carrying?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Over the years. Yeah. So with that, we are like, we don't really love the idea of like a big sperm bank with like an anonymous rando. So we brainstormed known donors and ended up with actually someone on her side of the family was willing and very eager to help us out in growing our family. So we were like, we also don't really want to get into the system. So I guess I didn't really touch on that. I grew up pretty like normal mainstream medical system, like kind of standard American childhood with birth stories of me, you know, wrapped around my head with my cord and bungeeing back inside and like not coming out and taking forever. And then my brother had a huge head. And so that fear story. So like just those kind of like normal fear stories, yeah. I suppose, drama. Mm-hmm. And so before I met my wife, I probably would have just gone like more of the medical route, but she had trained to be a midwife in the Philippines before coming to France. But didn't end up finishing the school because she was like, actually, I don't like this. I want to do postpartum stuff. So she kind of swerved, but she had that kind of midwifery, more home birth. She grew up more, in like the homeschooling world of lots of babies, babies born at home. So that was not like weird for her. And she had kind of talked to me about it, showed me videos. And so I was starting to be like, oh, you know what? That's actually looks way more enjoyable to be at your own home or a birth center or whatever is where I was at that time. So,
like,
yeah.
You see a picture of like a woman in a tub in her own home versus like a woman strapped down on drugs,
screaming
like strangers. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that people even choose that.
Right. Yeah. And I think that she had shown me, what is that business of being born? So kind of like that starter pack, mm-hmm. starter kit of like, this is not actually have your best intentions all the time in the hospital. So that was kind of, we're like, let's try to keep it as close to home as we can, just because that's the most like natural, quote unquote. And it also is the most comfortable. And we started researching how to get pregnant and how to do what an ICI at home, intra-cervix insemination.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. And that's what we decided to do. So that was in, what was that, June or July 2020. We invited our donor over, lived with us for a while, got it all synced up to my cycles. And
He had to stay with you because he didn't live nearby.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Is the idea that your kid will know that he's the donor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. Because it's just like a special uncle, you know, is what it would be. But then also knowing that he helped us make the family for sure. When they're
like at some point they're gonna be like, what's up with the dad situation, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. And so so he comes there. I mean, just like how weird is it? Or it must be just such a combination of excitement and kind of awkward and like,
oh yeah.
Gosh, I'm just picturing it right now.
It's definitely something. I think there's a lot of nervous excitement surrounding it because you're just trying to play it cool and like normal. It's like just another day at the house. And then, you know, that night you're just going to be like both doing it in different rooms in a way,
oh my God,
you know, because
totally.
You have to.
And you used it fresh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 Fresh and right then and there on that night. And actually we wanted to do it a few times. During that ovulation window. So I think total 5 times. And a couple of weeks later, and I was pregnant the first try. It was amazing. I think we kind of joke that it's the most surprise pregnancy that two women can have, because we are expecting, you know, a journey. It could take as long as it takes. Like, we're ready for it whenever, blah, blah, blah. So cool. That was fantastic. And, super easy peasy pregnancy with her. But we did decide to go more of like a midwives birth center route.
Okay.
I think it was kind of what I thought was my middle ground of not wanting to be at home, but not wanting to be at the hospital. And it was a completely standalone, like old house in downtown Dallas. We were in Dallas at the time. So it was like a completely separate building, not even like a wing of a hospital. So, you know, it kind of felt homey.
And why do you know exactly why you didn't want to be at home?
And now looking back, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know why. I think at the time I was still working through like rewriting my brain and how I'd been grown up, you know. That's my best guess. But yeah, and we had heard good things and it was really beautiful. It had a big tub. Like, we didn't have a big tub, just like some of those things that you're like, oh, glamour, and like that could be comfy. So it was a rotating midwifery group, and you try to meet them all before the end. And of course, the night that I had her was my least favorite midwife on call.
That always happens.
Always.
I'm pretty sure I know the exact place you're talking about. I think I've done two different birth trauma debriefs with women who have like transferred from there. There
yeah.
can't be many of what you're describing.
Yeah.
Like
exactly.
An old house.
I think there's a few. Yeah. I think there's one that's in two different houses and I don't know if I really want to give in the gossip, but it's
it's fine.
It's shutting down.
The birth centers don't really survive.
That's so interesting, is that?
Well, I think they have way more restrictions on their rules and regulations are way, 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 way more strict than being inside a hospital or being in a home setting. And so I think that alone makes it really challenging. I think they're also pretty expensive to maintain.
Yeah. No, I think this one had a few suits filed.
And then there's that.
Yeah. Anyways, so I, really simple, straightforward pregnancy. I honestly had been having a lot of like health anxiety before getting pregnant about like my digestive system and all this kind of mess that I had sought out medical care for, even like in ERs and certain things, because I was just extremely like unhealthy. I was just really anxious and unhealthy, and nobody could give me an answer. Like, there was no answer for me in the medical system. And I think I had to go through that to realize like, oh, like you don't have the answers about my body. So that was another part of, I think, that, because then when we moved into the pregnancy, my body just like turned 180 and was so healthy. I didn't have any digestive issues. I didn't have that anxiety anymore. I was just like, oh, my body is like literally doing what it was made to do. It's so cool. I loved that. And really the pregnancy with the midwife check-ins was pretty smooth too. Pretty drama-free. The only drama there was that blood sugar test. It actually came up too low. Like, I had what is it called?
Gestational. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that means.
Okay.
Whatever that means.
Whatever.
Keep eating is basically, they were like, just eat a lot. I was like,
great.
Okay, I can do that. yeah. And then it came around to birthing time, and I started feeling like tightenings and all the things right on 40 week day. And I was like, is this it every single day? But it wasn't until 5 days later that started leaking waters and bouncing on the yoga ball. Like, I think this is the real thing. Trying to get in contact with the midwives. Can we come in? They're like, but wait, just stay home a little bit longer. And we're like, okay, I don't want to go on this car ride when I'm so far along, you know, just like all this extra like head stuff that I'm like, so glad I didn't have this time. There's just so much.
I don't know how it is in Texas, but in LA, in California, the patient isn't allowed to be at the birth center for more than 24 hours. And so that's a part of the pushing them off, because then there's also like a postpartum time, which is usually very short in a birth center, but
yeah,
it's pretty fucked up actually.
Yeah.
because you actually, and I don't really know of birth centers being transparent about that. So I wonder how it is in Texas. I don't know.
Uh-huh. I think they also often overbooked themselves. And so they only had two birthing suites and sometimes it would get really stacked. So anyways, I finally at one point come in because I had felt a pop. I knew some waters were leaking. I was feeling like pretty intensely, but I had done some hypnobirthing like courses, which give or take, I think were fine, but I think they were perfect for me at that time to enter back into my body because I had not really done breath work or anything like that. And the way that I took it through that was entering into my body instead of out of my body. And so it was just like lots of breathing and centering. And I felt like I was handling it, quotes also, handling it pretty well. But also was getting so intense. So we got there and the midwife's, you know, checking my dilation, which was so painful. And she's like, "Oh, you're full." And I was like, "What? Oh, you're fully dilated." And we were like, "What?" You know, then it's the freak out, call birth photographer, call doula, call the birth assist. They all got to get here because this mom's like about to give birth, you know? And so we were like, "Oh, that's awesome." You know, like, "Wow, that was so easy and quick and blah, blah, blah." But as you can probably imagine, I don't have a baby for a long time after that because I feel like I probably had just kind of closed myself off because then we had gotten there. I was trying to settle in and it was just really strange because I look back and I'm just like, why, who in their actual right mind would tell a laboring woman to walk stairs? And that is what I was told to do for hours because they thought baby wasn't descending. I just remember, I mean, you just go along with it. Like you just do what they tell you to do. That was the vibe, right? And so I was just doing that. And I look back even at like my birth video that I had of that. And I'm just on the stairs puking my guts out because I puked so much in that birth. So much. And just couldn't hold on to myself. Like we got there around 10 p.m. and I didn't have her till 6:45 a.m. And I think I felt like I was in transition that whole time. Like I was in major pain. They kept putting me on the peanut ball to like open up my cervix. And I kept asking, this was the crazy part too. I kept asking to get in the pool and they kept saying, "Well, go on the back, go on the toilet one more time, you know, go on the peanut ball one more time and then we'll get on the bath. Okay. Go to the bathroom one more time and then we'll get in the bath," to the point where Rebecca at one point was like, "She's going in the bath right now. So please stop. Like, just stop. She's going in the bath right now." And so I went in that bath and oh my gosh, that was when I went out of my body. That's when I just zenned. Maybe I just like relax a little bit, you know, because I've been walking stairs. Okay. Anyways, 40 weeks pregnant. I finally like lay down. Rebecca, of course, is like trying to like care for me as much as she can throughout it all, like trying to give me back rubs and head rubs and all these things. But she's also in that power dynamic feeling. Like we've kind of debriefed about it afterwards too. She's like, I felt like something was wrong, but like, there's just such power dynamics that you don't know what to do with yourself. So finally got in the pool, was in there for a while, really relaxed, felt the sensations and the tightenings, but not the pain. It's really great. And then all of a sudden, like, I think you need to start pushing. Do you feel pushy? Do you feel pushy? Do you feel pushy? Like she asked me that so many times. And
you're the one that's pushing.
And I'm a first time mom. What the frick does pushy feel like?
It's such an asinine question because when you see a woman pushing, it's pretty goddamn obvious. You know what I mean? Like, can you imagine going up to someone throwing up or about to throw up and being like, are you gonna throw up? Like if you aren't throwing up, then you know what I mean? Like it's, you're not throwing up. Right. If you're not pushing, it's such a dumb controlling question that does so much damage to the vibe you just got in.
Yeah, for sure.
Hate.
Moving through. So of course I'm kind of manipulated out of the pool to push again, to go on the peanut ball, to lay on the bed, all the things. And then at one point they're checking again. It's like 3 a.m. and they're checking me again. And they're like, oh, there's a lip. It's a cervical lip. That's why the baby's not coming out. Their head's in clinic. It's not going to come out, you know, on its own. We've got to melt this lip on the peanut ball. And oh my gosh, when they put me on that peanut ball again, poor Rebecca, I punched her. I bit her. Like, I was in so much pain. It was like, it was so bad. But of course, I'm laying there with my leg over a peanut ball. Like, sometimes I look back and I'm like, but you're laying there. Anyways, well, you're not doing anything else.
It's torture.
Yeah. It truly felt like torture. And then finally, at that point, I think I was just kind of getting done with that. And maybe I started feeling pushy because I was like, I'm pushing now. And so I started pushing and, of course, with help and fingers in me, pushing the lip aside, all of that crazy stuff. Baby came out in like 20 minutes, very, very like, I think obviously I was done. And so I was like, I am pushing this baby out with all of my might, pushed her out. They put her on my chest pretty quick, wiped her face and things. But I remember laying there and like her on my chest and like not seeing her for multiple minutes because like her head was there and I hadn't actually seen her as she was being pulled up. So I didn't know what she looked like. I didn't know her eye color. I remember laying there kind of just frozen, right? And just like, oh, there's a baby on me. And like, I'm tearing, but I'm not crying. It's like those like kind of automatic tears and definitely a little bit overwhelmed with all the people and a baby on my chest. That's all done, but I still kind of hurt. And you know, it was just, it was weird.
It's traumatic. You know, if we were to, a definition I heard of trauma a long time ago that I really liked, that I think about a lot, is things occurring that your mind isn't able to keep up with in real time, like not able to integrate in real time as it's unfolding. And I think about, you know, the situation, which is so common, and because your medical provider stole your moment, right? Where in a physiological birth, you know, in a normal birth, there's steps of how the mother meets her baby that are really important for the mother's integration in her consciousness and for the baby too, sure. And, you know, women all the time tell me that, you know, they have this baby pulled out, placed on their, you know, after being abused for quite some time, and then the baby's there. And yeah, like, just like how you described, it's kind of almost this like flat moment where it's not integrated because of how baby winds up, you know, you did not bring baby. And really, most women don't actually bring baby right to the chest. They do a visual assessment.
You know, I hadn't thought about like, that.
Yeah. It's really sad. And it's such a quick thing that I don't think women like really slow down to kind of credit why they feel so, whatever the word is, disoriented or like not full of oxytocin or any of these things. A lot of women will just say like, you know, I just felt like shock or just like glad it was out of me, but not actually like,
glad it was over too, you know? And it's also hard when everyone's like celebrating around you, like with these big faces and smiles. And I mean, even Rebecca, like you just pushed our baby out. Like she has the greatest of intentions of like, oh my gosh, it's our baby, you know?
It's intense.
Anyways, yeah, big stuff. And then after that, going back in the bath for like a little herbal bath we had afterwards, but 4 hours were up and they were like, bye, you know, like, see you later. Mm. And that's when we were kind of like, okay, all right, I guess we'll go home now. Yeah, it felt very rushed. It felt very quick. They're like, watch this video, do this thing, read this, sign this, right? Oh man, crazy. Wow. Crazy. But we got home and it was pretty great and pretty supported postpartum wise after that. I mean, Rebecca is just probably the best caregiver there ever could be of a postpartum mom 2 times now, like just helping me to the toilet, helping me back, doing all the things.
Good.
Yeah.
And how did this kind of unfold? Like, I'm sure it happens in layers, but do you have a sense pretty early that you like didn't like how that went, or did that take years?
Yeah, I think I think it took time. Probably until Naya got me interest, like even listening to Free Birth Society podcasts and like her talking about her birth. And I mean, because we walked through our pregnancy together with her first as well. And so I think we are all kind of walking this together of like, oh, it could be better than that, right? Like that, we thought that was great in the moment, but oh, it could be so much better.
Okay, so you did leave that birth being like, that was amazing.
I think I felt empowered, and most people were like congratulating me for doing it unmedicated, right? So they're like, you just birthed a baby without drugs. Like, and I felt pretty proud of that because I think there are a lot of women from that birth center who do transfer because they're so exhausted and they go get epidurals, which honestly, you know, don't really blame them. And, or they go and get an emergency C or whatever. So like, I felt proud of myself for doing it. I think that was the biggest emotion. So at that point we were just, I did a lot more. I think it took over a year because I was just reading back my birth, like thing that I wrote about my first birth. And I didn't have the same sentiments that I do now. So that was a year after I birthed her. So she's three now. I think it took a couple years to fully digest that birth, and hearing birth center or midwife stories on the podcast too.
And what did that do like, for you?
Oh, just like, oh, that sounds similar. Oh, you know, like, ow. Yeah. That's kind of what happened to me. And just that continual thinking, like, I think it was that little, you know, piece of my brain that's like, it could be better. You know, it could be better than that. There's so many layers to this. I have so much to say, but one of the things too about interesting about that whole postpartum was Rebecca actually induced lactation to also feed our kiddo. And she went through a whole like protocol multiple months before baby was born, pumping around the clock, doing all that sort of thing, wanting to have a breastfeeding relationship with the baby as well. And you know, you bring that up to people and they're like, oh, that's so amazing. Like you can not have to wake up in the night. You can take turns. You can go do your own thing and no baby's going to be breastfed at home. And so we were like pretty jazzed about it. You know, we're excited to experience that together. But after birth, I was extremely possessive of the baby.
Yeah.
And territorial and like, out of my mind feeling, which I know is postpartum hormones. And I also look back to thinking of like my birth was also kind of traumatic, like taking the baby out of me. And so I, it was really, really hard for our marriage.
Did you follow, did you let her do it? Did she follow through?
So the thought was, especially the first few weeks, I would obviously have primary because I was healing my body and connecting to baby and oxytocin and regulating my supply because I didn't know what my supply would be like, all that
and
sort
you're
of
the
stuff.
Birthing
so
mother.
I was, yes. Yeah. So I was 100% priority and we all knew this. She just wanted to like maybe latch once or like once a day after a couple weeks to have the baby know how to latch and that sort of thing on her because it's different. So we tried doing that like once or twice a day and that was not, I did not do very well, but it's so personal. It's so personal and so emotional filled, especially when it's two women. And she actually was like, it's kind of one of her professions is like lactation consultant. Like she's really passionate about breastfeeding mothers. And so she wanted to have that experience herself. And we had not heard anyone doing anything like this before. So we had no way to expect it in our mindsets that we were at the time.
Would you say that you were 100% on board with that prior to the birth?
I think so. Yeah. And I didn't know.
Right. It's conceptual.
Especially because I didn't know how I would mother. I didn't know how I would birth. I didn't know how I'd breastfeed. So before that, you're just kind of like, oh, cool, we can kind of just do this thing like a team project, right? Like you don't have a way to.
Yeah. Wow. That's so interesting. Like when I, like if, well, I mean, it has occurred when two women have come to me before one of them births to talk about this, I have a whole like complete opposite end spectrum perspective of what I would say. And it, you know, like the whole, really like that whole perspective you received from everyone around you, I'd say is like quite misogynistic and anti, like anti baby, really. Mm-hmm. Like it's anti biology, you know, you know, and we're in an interesting culture. And I mean, you're two women to begin with, so it's already opening up edges of conversation around parenting mm-hmm. already, right? Like even the way that you brought the baby in is, you know, it's different or effortful or like, yeah, it's a different arena, right? We know this.
Yeah.
And so, wow. Yeah. So you didn't have anyone to talk to counsel who had been through it. That's such a big, I'm really like putting myself, yeah, in your postpartum and just how intense that must have been.
Right. I felt crazy, especially when it was my own wife, the mm-hmm. other parent of my child that I trusted completely with everything. But if she would walk out of the room with the baby, I'd be like, is she going to breastfeed her? She's going to breastfeed her. I can't do that. You know, I would spiral and I would get crazy. Mm-hmm. And so
were you forthcoming about that pretty quickly?
I'm trying to think back, but I think we talked about it as much as we could. She was very emotional about it. I was very emotional about it, but we like tried to like say that I was uncomfortable. Like obviously I would just cry a lot. So like you also mm-hmm. can't really hide that. Yeah. So that was just such a weird mm-hmm. part of it. But then it was like 6 or 8 weeks in, Rinley started refusing her.
The baby. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then of course I'm feeling a little bit of positive feelings while Rebecca's melting down because her baby is screaming at her breast and that is like a lot for her too. So yeah, wow. Then that just kind of came to be where she pumped for a few months more to kind of help supplement my supply as I went back to work. Cause I'm teaching, I was a teacher at the time. So I went back full time around 4 months postpartum. And so her supply kind of helped my supply keep up with Rinley's and she stopped pumping around 6 months.
Would you very briefly say what the, protocol is to get a non-pregnant woman lactating?
For sure. So it generally, people do different ways, but generally yeah. You start taking birth control for 2 months or a few months actually, to tell your body that you're pregnant, and you skip the placebo pills, and that kind of is to raise hormone levels, and then you stop. And along this way, you're also taking another drug that's not fully legal in the United States, but it's for helping breastfeeding in every other country of the world. It's like a drug probably people know. And so you take that alongside while you're taking the birth control. And then all of a sudden, whenever you want to start feeding the baby, I know a lot of adoptive moms try this as well. They drop the birth control and then start pumping. And it's supposed to be that progesterone mm-hmm. drop to like a birth and then pump around the clock every 2 hours, like a newborn would. Wow. And some women's bodies respond in such different ways. And she actually got a really good response and got a full supply of milk from it.
Wow.
Donated so much breast milk before the baby was even born because it was just all filling up our freezer.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So by 6 months, it's done.
Yes.
I can only imagine, yeah, the complicated vibes in the household.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so obviously you're still together. How, mm-hmm. how does that go?
I think
giant question.
Right. I think there's also something to be said about like women, like we compartmentalized definitely in some ways, because it was just that side of our relationship that was like struggling. Everything else was like bliss of having a chunky, gorgeous, healthy baby. And so it was definitely relief though for everybody when she stopped, because she was no longer tied to a pump or like feeling the feelings of like, why am I pumping when I could be feeding a baby, but my baby won't feed off me, sort of thing.
Was she ever able in that window to, I mean, it's like a really personal question, but was she ever able to like really get and hear your, you know, what is a very primal, protective, stance?
I think so. Like, I have heard now that we did it, we've actually come in contact with a couple different lesbian moms who have also done it and had, I think, bigger struggles, because we are super communicative, that I think that she did get it. And especially since stopping pumping, I feel like that kind of helped to distance. And like, even a year later, having a more in-depth conversation about it was healing for both of us, because I think she completely understands where I was coming from now. And you know what? Some of it even having to do with the birth, because we didn't really understand the trauma that had happened in that birth for a year and a half or two. I think that also helped her frame it as well. That it's like, obviously, it's not that I don't trust you. It's not that I don't love you, or that I don't think you could help our baby survive. I don't have any of those like mental thoughts. It's just literally the primal things inside of me responding to what was happening. So
yes. And then
I think she does.
Like, in the pregnancy, it's a theoretical idea. Like, you can intellectually agree to it, but the lived experience of birthing your young and nursing your young is incredibly specific to that mother baby flow,
like ecosystem, right?
And it really just the other parent just isn't a part of it. You know, and it's tricky. Like by design. I'm not talking about opinions or values or any of that stuff, but by literal design. That's really, really complicated. So so you move through that, but everything else is just wonderful. And take us into then the next pregnancy. And of course, I'm curious why she doesn't then carry.
So right after that, I have to say that we definitely were still subscribing to some medical things at that point. And a year after, because we wanted our kiddos to be 2 years apart, roughly, because we wanted four. And it's like, kind of wanted to have our babies now and then be out of that stage of our life and be with our family. So we started working towards reciprocal IVF, which is like the most medical like way you can do with two moms, I have to say. But we just had this envisioning of my biological egg with the exact same donor, all of the kiddos being the same biology, and her carrying that embryo. So we, So then we go to Mexico the year after our daughter was born. I mean, generally had a good doctor. I mean, he was fine. He was great. And the hormones jacked me up bad.
Yeah. Cause you're doing egg extraction.
Retrieval.
Retrieval. Yeah. And I just want to make sure the listeners are following what you're saying, that it's the same donor. So you're bringing it frozen down there.
No, he came down.
Oh, he came.
Yeah.
So he comes down with you. Mm-hmm. He's just all in.
Yeah, he is. He's awesome.
And then, but you do egg retrieval, which has its own like massive can of risks and a big toll on your body. But it's successful. You get the eggs out.
Oh, lots of eggs, like 25. Wow. And then I think 22 were viable. And then when they made the embryos, it went down to 9 after 5 days. So we had 9 embryos down there. And we decided to do one fresh. So like it didn't even get frozen. They mashed them up and like put it in her. And that was in July. And that one did not stick. There was no pregnancy after we had gotten home. And so, you know, we thought that it would be cheaper going to Mexico because it's so expensive here in America. But I don't think we thought through of like, except if it doesn't work, keep going down to Mexico. So, anyways, so we decided to do the next month. Rebecca went down again with her friend. I stayed back with Rinley here, which was also really weird and wild. She goes down, like gets shot up pregnant with two embryos, comes back, and we do get a positive pregnancy test from that. But then around, I think it was 6 weeks, she lost them, both. And so then we're just reevaluating. Do we try again? Let's give your body a break, whatever. So we give her a break. She goes back and we actually go back together in January without Renly. We leave her back with grandparents and we're kind of trying to treat it like a baby making vacation. And we go down, put in another two embryos. We just thought that two for one would be good, like, use of our time and money. It's so silly when you think about it. And also, like, if one sticks, maybe the other doesn't. But also, we're down for twins. Like, we're not scared of twins either. So we were like, whatever. And we get a positive pregnancy test again when we get back. But then, and we even go for an ultrasound because, of course, they're wanting an ultrasound to show that they're viable. We see their heartbeats at 6 weeks. And then we go back for the 9 or 10 or 11 week, whatever it was. And they were not there. She was still having all of the pregnancy signs, like, cause she was loading her body up with progesterone and like telling her body that she was pregnant, but they weren't growing anymore. They had probably stopped around 6 weeks, around when we had first gotten that ultrasound, which is also fishy to me. But that was really rough because by this point, so this is January 2020.
So starting to get weird.
2022. January 2022. We're like starting to hear more about Free Birth Society, starting to hear a little bit more stories about sovereign births, not wanting to go into the system to let the babies go because the babies were still in there. They weren't coming out. And so it took probably about 3 or 4 weeks of waiting after knowing that they were not viable in there anymore. And then it was a pretty intense miscarriage when she finally did have it. So
she stayed at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually we were out of town. We were at my parents' house. Yeah. It was kind of crazy. We were supposed to go to a wedding that night and she's all of a sudden like, I'm not going to the wedding.
Aww.
I'm not going to the wedding. You know, so it's really sad, really hard. But yet again, we just had to regroup and be like, this has been so much, so much on her body, so many meds, so much junk. And we can't afford to go back down to Mexico. We just can't. And we were wanting a baby. And I was trying to kind of leave it into Rebecca's hands because knowing that she has a deep desire to be pregnant, I wasn't going to be like swerving in and saying, well, what about me? You know, I was just kind of waiting for her to give the okay.
So because then that means by choosing a donor that was on her side of the family, that essentially, without you guys totally realizing it at the time, signed you up as the birthing mother, if you want to keep the same genetics on the male side. So the other option would be different donor and let her be the birthing mother.
I think a lot of it had to do too with like, I have a brother too, but he's young and we didn't really feel comfortable with that. And so it just ultimately felt good to do it that way. But yeah, I don't think we understood what we were kind of signing up for in that way. All that being said, she was like, all right, like, I want a baby. Let's try you again. And so
still feeling very clear or attached to that the male needs to be the same person.
Yes.
Because I'm just like imagining myself in this situation. And I like, if I really wanted to be the pregnant woman, I feel like I would less prioritize that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's also that we really love the way that it's been with him as our donor.
Yeah.
Like, he's just the perfect.
That's high value.
He wants to be a part of the life, but not too much. He wants to be involved, but not too much. Yeah. He wants to help us out in all the ways, go to Mexico, go here, there. And it's just what's been so perfect. We've got papers signed. Everything's like dotted, you know, all the I's are dotted. But we, you know, in future, we might be taking a different route. Like, that's kind of where we're at for our future babies. If we want her to get pregnant, we might be swerving and having to do some deep figuring out of what we want to do next. But
and I want to hold space for the very real possibility that in making that, if you guys, you know, go that route and make that decision to let go of him being the third, you know, or fourth, whatever donor, so that she can be the birthing mother. Like, it's really within the realms of possibility that you find another really amazing option, you know,
it's
like
true.
He's not the only male out there who could be a really great fit.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, it's so intense. Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So intense. So she comes, she's like, let's have you
she's
go.
She's like, again. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. Let's start tracking your cycle. Oh yeah. I was down. I knew I wanted to be pregnant again. I knew I wanted to birth again. I was just kind of waiting for it. So yeah, that was, I got my time wrong. That was 2023. So 2023 summer, we start trying again. I'm starting to track. He comes up to visit us in June. It actually doesn't work the first time. Comes again in July. It works again. And we're pregnant again. And it just felt so easeful. Like, especially after all of that crap with IVF, just to be in our own bed and like making a baby was like, oh my gosh, like this is how it's supposed to be, right? Like,
I'm picturing her and like just how confronting that is, you know, like that really requires a high level of emotional intelligence.
Oh yeah.
Maturity to
hold
the pain, right? Like, there's got to be some layers of jealousy and comparison just because that's a natural thing to do in these scenarios. Mm-hmm. And also, you're married and you're a family and this is the right
and
thing
she,
for your family. And
and she never like lets that on to me. Like, rarely ever. It's always excitement. It's always wanting my body to be successful. And like, it is, and we celebrate that. And I do definitely think that if it was the other way around, I would have to do so much work, like mentally and emotionally.
Oh yeah, me too. I'm sure she is. I'm sure she is doing.
Yes, absolutely. It, absolutely. Yeah.
It's like in front of your face every day or not.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's so complicated. She's okay.
Pretty amazing. Yeah.
I hope you will come to MRF together.
We want to. I know. We want to so bad. We almost came this year. It was so cool.
Okay. So you're pregnant. Everything's great. And now we're entering into, okay, I have two, I want you to touch on two things. One, at what point do you align with the sovereign thing? Mm-hmm. And like, what is that all like? And is that happening once you're pregnant or before? Like, when are you like, I'm free birthing?
For sure.
And I also want to know about her and the nursing stuff. Like, is that complete because it was such a last time, or does she go again?
Mm-hmm. So, you know what? I think we were honestly leaning towards sovereign birth when she was pregnant with the twins. She was actually thinking about having the twins at home. We have a RVK in the area who's kind of like going back and forth to, I think it's Alabama in here, but she would come up and like be here
Amana?
For the twins. Yeah.
Oh, she's so special.
Uh-huh. She's amazing. Cool. We've been to some women's circles with her and gotten to know her. And we were like, you can definitely be at our birth.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So she was actually planning on doing that with the twins, now that I think about it. And planning on having her come up. But obviously we had to kind of debrief with that. And actually it was perfect. Like, Amana to talk to her about like grief and losing babies and all those sort of things was honestly really great and healing for her. So we were on that track. And then Amana was being like kind of living most of the year elsewhere. So we didn't really have anybody else that was of option here in the area. I was honestly trying to get Naya out here, but she was like, I gotta be honest with you. Like, I don't know if we can, like, we just moved to Hawaii, all that kind of stuff. So it was like more out of like, there's just not really people around, and I don't mind doing it the free birth way. Because like, I know my body can do it, and I bet it can do it better than it did last time.
Without constant harassment.
Yeah. For sure. That was actually a pretty easy decision. It was more just coming to terms with how to tell people, if to tell people, like in our sphere around here that are more medicalized, if to tell parents or not, you know, all that sort of thing, which eventually we did by the end. Basically, you know, you have a midwife? No. Oh. And then, you know, sometimes I'd just be cheeky, be like, I'm the midwife. Yeah. You know, so yeah, walking a wild pregnancy felt really easy. Felt just the way that it was supposed to be. There was not really much exciting besides being exhausted with a 2-year-old and right. full-time working. I am still a music teacher right now. I'm doing elementary music and generally loving it. Like, it's definitely right up my alley. The dream at some point to have like a little village school and be the music teacher there, but alas, here we are. And so I would like dance and sing and like move xylophone instruments all day and then come home and like be jumped by a 2-year-old.
And just bang out that Three Blind Mice on recorder.
Woo! It's Hot Cross Buns too. I guess that's kind of the same song, isn't it? Anyways, I know I was like, this baby will be able to sleep through anything because it is so chaotic outside this whole pregnancy. Yeah. So pregnancy, pretty easy. We had a friend up here who is a midwife in the system who, you know, is one of those things like, if we need her, we can call on her for a test or an exam or whatever. But we kind of knew that we weren't going to do that. But that was almost for everybody else's like comfort level. You would just say that and they'd be like, oh, okay. So
it's like, as long as someone else is in charge, like as long as it's not the parents.
Right. Yeah. So interesting, right?
But what about the lactation stuff?
Okay. Yes. So we had big conversations before and while I was pregnant. Obviously in her losing the babies, there is that little fear, ding, 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 in the back of her head that she won't be able to carry any of our babies and that I will mostly be doing it. And then she won't be able, because I had kept saying, like, you'll carry someday and you'll know what it's like and you'll breastfeed. Like, you'll understand someday. I was, you know, easily to say that before we went through all of this kind of trying to conceive stuff. So I think she had some fear that she wasn't going to be able to breastfeed any of our kids. And so she did want to try again, at least doing it for pumping. She was like, I'm going to come to terms with, if I'm just pumping and providing milk that way, then that's how I'm doing it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of helped take the pressure off of me. And I also thought in a sovereign birth, like in my free birth where I was calling all the shots, maybe I wouldn't feel so territorial afterward.
What do you mean the pressure off of you? What pressure?
I don't know. Pressure to...
nurse?
No, pressure to have her nurse instead of me, right?
Okay.
Because there is some level of, she's worked really hard to provide this milk. So pressure to let her nurse, okay. I think is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
But if she doesn't feel like she has to nurse,
right.
has to breastfeed on the breast, then I could call the shots. I like, as I felt like I should, and as I felt like I would,
It's so intense that the IVF way, you know, was her way of trying because of the situation, because that's also like the least likely to work,
Right.
you know. So
Yeah.
it's like a brutal entry point for her,
For
because
sure.
the odds are literally like very stacked against her, and that's not a reflection of her fertility,
Right.
you know. So
Yeah.
that's pretty like
And I
gut.
think she already has like a pretty big like nervousness surrounding her fertility
Sure.
with what people have said about PCOS and all these sort of stories that she's been told that she already believes that she doesn't have like the fertility. And what the mainstream tells you to do then is go do IVF. If you're going to have trouble getting pregnant, go do IVF, right? So I think when we were still on that mindset, when we were deciding, it seemed like, oh, well, it might be tricky for her to get pregnant anyway, so we might as well, right? But that's what the story tells. But it, yeah, they don't, you don't know how brutal it is, how hard that process is. So, yeah, like I said, we're kind of leaving things and holding things lightly for the future, that we'll kind of see how things turn. That being said, she did decide to induce again. And like, I guess she did, we did. Like, I said, that's all right. Let's try this again and rewrite it, and be more informed with what happened before, knowing that those emotions would be there and knowing that we can kind of like nip it in the bud if there is the similar issue, that we would be able to talk about it and like adjust as needed. And you know, it's been another journey, and it feels much better this time for sure, because she's really primarily pumping and offering once or twice like a day, but never for a full feed. I don't really feel the same feelings that I did last time. And I'm able to communicate and be like, hey, I want to feed her now. Or like, I'm feeling kind of full. Like, I want to feed her now. And she's like, okay, here you go. Like, I feel like we're a lot more even and like our communication and aware that my emotions and my postpartum is priority, especially in these first few months. But here's the tricky thing too. Okay. I am planning on going back to work again. I earn more for our family, and I enjoy my job. And so I'm going to go back and work when she's about 6 months. And Rebecca runs a daycare out of our home. So the girls get to stay home with her and take care of other kiddos in the home as well. And so she and I would prefer that she's like nursing versus being bottle fed throughout the day when I go back to work. And so the hope was that she would take over daytime feeding, and then I would have her whenever I'm home. So if that was nights, all weekends, all school breaks, she's nursing off of me. But when I'm at work, that Rebecca would be the one nursing. So I think that's kind of what we're doing right now, is holding out for that, because I haven't gone back yet, and seeing how that pans out. Because she definitely still has a preference. Our babies 100% have a preference for me, and for feeding off me, which does make biological sense completely.
If she is able to carry a pregnancy all the way, what do you think you're gonna do?
I know. I thought for the longest time that I would also co-feed, because I was still breastfeeding Rinley. I actually just this week stopped feeding her, and she's 3. And so I was still nursing her. I still had milk supply. The plan after she did IVF and gave birth to the babies was for me to help, especially with twins, for me to help feed. So if I'm still breastfeeding, I think I would try as well. I don't really want to do all of the extra stuff, because I want to say I'm not lazy. I don't think it's lazy for not doing that. I don't want to. So
Daisy is
if,
not the word.
okay, no, I just don't want to. So if I'm still breastfeeding our youngest, I definitely would try to breastfeed when I could.
For the same reasons that she...
Of connection. Yeah. Yeah.
I was wondering if it had switched for you at all, feeling...
Yeah.
You know, being the birthing mother. And
absolutely. I think that there definitely is even more of a level of, like, continually checking in with her of, like, if it was okay, because I know how it would... how it felt for me. We're also just very different humans. She's just much more practical brain, but we also know that postpartum doesn't involve practical brain. So, you know, there's one way to, like, talk through and be like, oh, she's probably wouldn't be as possessive as me. Like, she probably wouldn't be as emotional as me, but maybe she would, because it's her story and it's her birth and postpartum too.
But that implies that it's like a personality trait.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know, whether mm-hmm. she is going to be tuned into her primal nature to be the one exclusively nursing her young or not, I don't know. She might maybe ignore our instincts all the time. So,
for sure.
But I don't think it would be characterized as, because by that suggestion, yeah, it means that it would be like a characteristic. And I don't think that's quite true. Mm-hmm. I think it's, yeah. Anyway. Okay.
Anyway.
So you said 3 months ago you had this sweet little baby?
Mm-hmm. 3 months ago.
So you were tired and busy and wild pregnancy. You told mm-hmm. everyone eventually.
Yeah.
And tell us your birth story.
For sure. It was funny how my dream birth that I had walked through multiple times before, it's pretty much how it panned out. It was around the same timeline as Rinley. Right around 40 weeks, actually before 40 weeks, I was feeling all of the tensions, all the tightenings, you know, thinking it could be any day now, but knowing that it takes a while. And it's just, and at this point, we're also in the membership. And so I'm able to talk to to the moms and free birthing and wild pregnancy people on there. Like, is this normal? Or I'm in this waiting time and it's hard, you know, and about 6 days. It was 6 days after 40 weeks. And I'm like, oop, I am leaking waters again. We know what this means, but I'm also trying to be like, no, it's nothing. And I just remember coming up to that point being like, I don't have to stress about going anywhere. I don't have to stress about making sure anybody's here on time. We had a photographer, and she was like really chill about come, tell me to come whenever, don't, whatever. And so, but there wasn't that heady stress. I could just go into labor. And that was so nice. It's so simple. And I'm leaking waters. We're wanting to set up the birth pool, you know, not wanting to do it too early, but to have cold water. But then Rebecca's like, I can just keep boiling water and we can keep it warm. And I was like, okay, I want the pool. And then just rewriting that story, I can get in the pool whenever I freaking want and stay in the pool.
You are an
as
adult.
Long as I freaking want.
God.
And I did, okay? I really did. So I got in that tub. And of course, my wife is so like, planning ahead in so many parts of our life, but we had not planned ahead on how exactly to fill up that tub and hadn't tried it out before, which of course was how it was. And she was just bringing buckets, bringing one at a time in there, but it was fine because we had plenty of time. Around midnight, I was finally like, oh yeah, this is it. And starting ramping up, listening to Yolanda's affirmations and like some, what's her name? Alexia. Oh, she's really good music. Forget her name, but she got me through and just doing my thing. Photographer came at one point, but at one point I saw her like laying on the floor on the side of my bed, just like full on laying there, just like chilling. And I was like, yes, this is how I want it to be. You're just a fly on the wall. You're laying on the ground over there. And it got very intense. Like I did that whole thing of it's going to be pain-free. It's going to be like a blissful birth. Nope, not at all. Not at all. And it was intense for many hours. And I think I had also given myself the story of it was a quick labor last time, like 8 or 10 hours. This will be a quick birth. Like we, all the people in my circle, Naya, all these people had had their seconds and it was like quick, quote unquote. And I'm like, why is it not? Why am I not birthing it? It's supposed to be quick. I'm a good birther. What is this? Like, I'm a good birther. That's the silliest story. I'm walking back and forth from the toilet, doing all the things. Rebecca's just like, rubbing my back, and I'm loving the kind of like caretaking feeling and that sort of thing. It got intense though, and I was kind of like, I need my space now, but all right up here in our bedroom. Like we were able to get the birth pool up here, and so it was all, I was in here just like in this cocoon. And it was dark and it was overnight. Oops. And finally I get into like really heady stuff of rewriting that first story. Like I can't open up enough for this baby. Like the baby's stuck. I'm just like saying these things out loud. I don't believe them, but I'm saying them. And Rebecca, you saying, no, you can do it. No, you're birthing your baby. And then I'm like, call Naya. So then I call her because she's like on call for me. And I was like, this is hard. She's like, yeah, it's hard. All these things giving it back to me. And yeah, and eventually I felt pushy. Now I actually know what it's like to feel like I'm pushing a baby out. But it was so intense in my hips. I had just like the hips screaming on fire, fire hips, still in the pool. I'm holding on to the pool for dear life and just like starting to push because I'm like, I'm done. I want this baby out. I'm done. Push the baby where it feels like it's, yeah, busting me open, just expansion, insanity. And I'm like, Rebecca, get back there. Get back there, pushing this baby out. Get back there right now, and so she just like barely like touches and pushes it to me through the water. It, well, we didn't know if it was a boy or girl, so okay.
Kind of isn't it until you
it's
see
still it,
it.
okay? And so pulling it up, and I remember also doing the visual assessment. Now that you said it like that, I'm like, oh, I totally did that, but I did not look if it was a boy or a girl. I
No,
looked
no
at
one
the
cares.
face. I looked at that little face and everything was fine. She made sounds immediately, no worries. But we thought it was a boy the whole time. And so it was a major surprise when we were like, saw that. And there's a picture of us going like, wow, oh my gosh, it's another girl. And it was just pretty easy from there. When you're home, it's just easy, right? And I just like waddled over to the bed. I was like, maybe I can birth my placenta in bed and start nursing and that sort of stuff. And we woke up our 3-year-old. She came in, saw me with the placenta still in because we had talked about it all. If she was awake, we probably would have had her in there too, but it was just like she's sleeping. Nah. But it was about 5 a.m. and we were like, let's go wake her up so that she can still see it like in process and fully integrate for herself. Like this baby was in me, it's coming out, there's still a cord, all that sort of stuff. So I finally got the placenta out, probably like 20 or 30 minutes of trying. I finally went to the toilet, and sure enough, the toilet did the trick. But then, and I wanted it out. I was just like, I want this placenta out. I want to relax. I want to just get in bed and go to sleep. But not, like you're in that adrenaline too, where you're like wanting to call everybody. At least I was. I was like, I want to call everybody and be like, it's a girl. This is who she is, whatever. So I wanted to get in bed though. And I did. And we did, and I stayed in bed for a long time and didn't really get out of my upstairs oasis for a couple weeks. So finally, when we braved going downstairs, I just remember starting to get that antsy feeling of like, okay, I need to get out of here. But there was no pressure to do it, and
Right.
yeah.
Totally at your own pace.
Yeah. So it was beautiful, but it was also really, really hard. And I think even listening to stories like yours or, other births that are just like really intense and really painful has helped even me to integrate it more because you see all these pictures of home birth being blissful and beautiful and like picturesque.
Yeah. Their
That's all you
pictures.
see. see, I guess.
I'm sure the pictures of my birth parts of things might have looked.
Yeah.
A picture does not speak 1,000 words.
Not all the time, right?
But also, I was thinking when you were like, it wasn't blissful, I was thinking like, yeah, the bliss part comes eventually.
Yeah.
You know, it was, my birth was not blissful at all. Mine was like traveling through a hellscape.
Yeah.
But then it was great.
Yeah, right. But then it was great because especially, you know, you did it and like you did it your own way and have your baby. And
I was just thinking when I was listening to you, my kiddo is almost 2. And I, as you were talking about the fire hips and stuff, I was like, oh, I kind of can't remember it anymore.
Wow.
Like it's been long enough.
Yeah.
That I can't quite remember how horrible it was.
And there's that biology that lets you have another baby.
<That's funny>.
Amnesia.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
I appreciate you sharing the, you know, the more tender, sensitive aspects of this and the things you guys have faced, because it is, I mean, it's like beyond taboo. Like, no one talks about this stuff publicly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. I mean, maybe they do, and I don't know about it.
Not at this point that we can find, and which I think is good for our own, like, figuring it out ourselves. We're forced to figure it out ourselves and to, like, forced to about it together.
Well, I think even if you heard other people's opinions, you're still forced to
You still have to go,
out.
Yes.
Your life.
Yes. And I mean, even just thinking since we've had Rinley, our mindsets on so many things have completely evolved that we are, like, new mothers. We're new and different. And leaving space for that to continue is
better.
Yeah.
Better.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's, I just said that in the last episode, the last person I was interviewing. Like if you're not like constantly kind of evaluating and questioning what you're doing, that would imply that you're like not continuing to wake up. Even if you keep doing it with consciousness, that's great too. You don't have to change, but if you're not waking up, what are you even doing?
Right.
Which the more we wake up, the more things we change, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All righty. Sure. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for
listening.
I appreciate
your time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Take care.
You too. Have a good one.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive private vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me, My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. Death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back from